coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's election season, but you knew that. Today, we hear from candidates for the 87th Wisconsin Assembly District seat.
This mask mandate should not be a mandate. It should be a personal choice.
I think we should go according to what the science and the physicians say.
Plus, our news panel will review the battleground presidential visits and another installment in our local StoryCorps series.
How I feel about myself, that story I'm telling myself, drives how I'm thinking, and then it drives how I'm being able to do the work to not pass those things on. And that, to me, is the intergenerational healing piece.
After this. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Today we bring you the first of several debates for Wisconsin State Assembly seats that we'll be featuring on the show over the next few weeks. Today's is between candidates for the 87th District, which includes most of Sawyer County, all of Rusk and Taylor counties, a part of northwestern Marathon County, and a part of northwestern Clark County. The candidates are the incumbent, Republican James Edming of Glen Flora, and the challenger, Democrat Richard Poulcher of Lublin. Moderating the conversation, which was pre-recorded so no phone calls will be taken, is my colleague Dean Kallenbach. Here's Dean.
I'm Dean Kallenbach. I'm the host of Western Wisconsin's talk show, The West Side. And our guests are the candidates in the 87th Assembly District. Republican James Edming of Glen Flora is seeking his fourth term in office. He's been a farmer and a business owner and created Jimmy Boy Pizza. James Edming, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Democrat Richard Poulcher has a degree in economics and is retired from the Clark County Human Services Department. He lives in the town of Lublin. And Richard Poulcher, good to have you with us.
Glad to be here. By the way, it's Clark County Health Care Center.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And appreciate that. So let's begin. Richard Poulcher, Republicans have represented this district for well over a decade now. When you ran for this seat back in 2014 against James Edming, he beat you by a 2-1 margin. So what's different this time around, 6 years later, that has you running again?
Well, I don't think there's a whole lot different, but I think we need to make a difference. The Republicans have pretty much had control of the legislature since the redistricting following the 2010 census. And there are a couple of things that are issues that are bipartisan issues. One is fair maps, and the other one is the movement to amend.
James Edming, you've been elected to represent the 87th Assembly District since 2014. Why do you want to stay in the job?
Well, first off, I'd like to begin by saying this is by far the best job I've ever had. And I have had constituents contact me, contact my office with issues that's really, really dear to them. And it is absolutely refreshing and heartwarming to know that someone in your district has an issue and you can go to bat for them and get whatever the issue is that they have. And some of them are federal issues, some of them are state issues, some of them are local issues, but we take every call serious. And literally every call that comes to our office is either returned by a call from me personally or one of my staffers or a letter out to them. I'm sure there's some that fall through the cracks, but a very, very high majority of the calls that come in, and I hear this as I'm out on the road campaigning. You know, I've called your office six times, and we get a call every time back from you. And that's what we're there for. We're there to help the people, to help our constituents, and continue making Wisconsin a great place to live.
The Wisconsin Department of Health has ranked 66 of Wisconsin's 72 counties as having a high activity level of the coronavirus, and that includes counties in the 87th Assembly District, Ruskin, Taylor, Sawyer, Marathon, and Clark. Over 1,000 cases and 23 deaths have been recorded in those five counties as of this week. James Edming, as a Republican legislator serving with a Democratic governor, compare and contrast your party's virus response with that of Governor Tony Evers and other Democrats.
Well first off, you said there was, what, 1,000 deaths?
Within the five counties, and understanding that you're only in parts of those other, there's 1,000 deaths statewide, but over 1,000 positive cases and 23 deaths in the district or in the counties involved in the district.
Yes, and you can take a test, and it can show positive, but it doesn't mean that you have the virus. And Taylor County and Richard should know this number better than me. In Taylor County, I don't believe they've had a case down there. Ross County, we've only had a couple of people that have died. And by the way, on the way out on the road today, if I get run over by a beer truck and my steering column comes back in, crushes my chest and my lungs, I'm not going to die from crushed lungs. It's going to be the coronavirus. Because there's a pile of money that someone gets when they put that on the death certificate. But here in Russ County, this flu came through here last fall, about hunting season. I've talked to a number of people that have said, you know, I had to have had it. My sense of taste was gone. Sense of smell was gone. I was weak. I was tight in the chest, and after about 2 or 3 weeks, it disappeared. And I'm not saying that down in Milwaukee. I don't know about the other places, but in the 87th Assembly District, it's been pretty much nothing. I shouldn't say it like that. It's been very, very low per capita, and the common flu kills more people in Wisconsin than what this has done. And yes, it's serious because people die from it. I'm not skipping the rock on the water on this one, because there are people that get it and it does kill them. But literally, if you have, and I know a good friend of mine, his mother-in-law died. She was well into her 90s and she just ran out of gas. I mean, she was chugging along good, and all of a sudden, boom, she went on the other side. And they had to fight to not have on her death certificate coronavirus. They said, Ma died from old age, and they finally got it through, but there would have been another one.
So in May, the state Supreme Court, at the request of the legislature's Republican leadership, struck down Governor Evers' safer at home order, stating that he overreached his authority in doing so. Richard Pulcher, did the Supreme Court get it right?
Well, we have laws, and the Supreme Court acted according to their authority, as far as I know. I do know that I would never encourage anyone to put their life or anyone else's life at risk just so that I could have a good time. My grandfather died in 1918 from the flu. He left behind my grandmother, my uncle Clarence, 8, my dad Lawrence, 6, my aunt Agnes, 4, and my uncle Fred, 2. He was 35. And when you talk about getting the economy going so that we can expose more people, that's just ridiculous. Our economy was robbed 25 years of his productive life, much less everything that happened to his family.
One rule that has stayed intact so far is the governor's statewide mask mandate. Richard Pulcher, do we need that mask mandate?
I think we should go according to what the science and the physicians say. Whether it's mandated or not, if it would help, I will wear one. I'm not going to comment on the necessity of it or the need for it, but if it helps, everybody should be wearing one.
James Edming, your office issued a press release earlier this month saying that you would be in support of the legislature convening to overturn Governor Evers' mask mandate. Tell us why.
Well, first off, this mask mandate should not be a mandate. It should be a personal choice. Personally, I'm 74 years old. I'm not afraid of it. I'm in excellent health. And there's people that come into my convenience store and they have on a mask. God bless them. I don't care. If that mask is so good, they have one on and I don't, they should be protected. But this should be, now if you're in a county, if you're down in Milwaukee or Madison or some of these counties that really, really have high cases, load of these coronavirus, then it's up to the local, it's up to the local community. Now how, and when you talk about this mask mandate, I taught school for 5 years. I can't imagine taking a 5-6 year old kid and making them wear a mask all day long in school when they're sneezing and snotting. I mean, it's the way little kids are. You want to make kids not like school. That's the way you do it. I mean, rail transport is a good example of this. Rail transport is a huge trucking firm. I believe they're from Marshfield, I think. Marshfield or Black River Falls. If you are driving a rail transport truck and you get caught without a mask on, you are automatically fired. Now, I was out in Washington, D.C. here in the last month, and I had on a mask from the time I got on the airport in Minneapolis till I got back to Minneapolis again. And I have been absolutely hacking ever since I got back. And I haven't hacked for probably 40 years since I quit smoking. And when we breathe in clean oxygen, as clean as what we can get, you breathe in clean oxygen, you send out carbon dioxide, and then you bring it back in. The carbon dioxide goes out, the trees, the plants, the trees, the leaves, they turn that back into oxygen, and we take it back in. And when you have this mask on, you're breathing in oxygen that's filtered through what you've just kicked out for the last hour or whatever, however long you had it on, and then you send it back out again, and a lot of those particles hang in that mask, and then you sucker back into your lungs again. I mean, I just think that, and if someone wants to wear a mask, God bless them. I don't believe in them. And if there's a store that I go into that is absolutely mandatory that I have to wear that mask, unless it's the only place that I can get it, I'll find another place to go to, period.
Mike in Minocqua. Mike, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very well. What's your question?
Good. I just don't understand the incumbent's attitude about the virus. First off, the virus, when it's not symptomatic, it spreads just as easily. Secondly, businesses, schools, things like that aren't really going to get going full blast until we control the virus. And thirdly, it's only a matter of time between when it's in the cities and when it's in the rural areas. And I just wanted to ask him how he could have so little empathy to refer to a constituent as running out of gas. That poor lady in a nursing, I don't know if she was in a nursing home or if she was at home, but her family and people can't be around her. I think what he should do is he should volunteer to work at the emergency rooms when he's down in Madison and to see what a sad disease this is to die from. It's not like dying. It's just true that a lot of seniors do die from pneumonia, but this is a lot different, and it does affect young people.
Representative.
So that's all. I've got it. I just don't understand where he's coming from.
Thank you.
If he doesn't read or doesn't understand.
Thank you, Mike. Let's move to Representative Edming. Mike wants to know why you're not taking it more seriously, the COVID-19.
I am taking it serious. You misheard what I said. There are areas that it is absolutely, you know, and I mean, one good thing with the coronavirus, it's the only thing you die from today, there's no such thing. You don't hear it anyway of dying of cancer and dying of a heart attack and a suicide and all that, because they're pumping the numbers up on this. And the lady that I was talking to, she was at home. She was at home. She was doing fine. She had no fever. She had nothing. Now, if you want to talk about people in a nursing home, you take Cuomo out of New York State, the governor. He put known corona victims in nursing homes. Now that's bad. That's bad. And like I said earlier, if you want to wear a mask, God bless you, wear a mask. I see people driving down the road with their windows rolled up and the air conditioning turned on, and they have on masks. There was a guy out on the Flambeau River here a couple of weeks ago. He was out fishing, and this is a big body of water. There was not a boat in sight. Out in God's clean, fresh air. And he's got on a mask, breathing this stuff back into his lungs again. But there again, it should be, if you're in an area where there's a lot of it going on, yes. But I'd like to know how many cases you had up in your country that have been absolutely diagnosed as the coronavirus. A huge percentage of them. I know of people that went in to get this test. They stood in line. They had registered that they were going to have it done. They stood in line and stood there for a couple hours and said, "To heck with it! I can't. We've got to go to work." They left, and then they got the results back from the test that they were positive, and they never even got tested. You know, but again, if you are scared of it and you're nervous about it, that's you know, then go for it. But wear a mask, sit in your house, go in the basement, whatever, you know, wherever you feel safe. We live in a free country. We can do pretty much what we want to do. And I don't want to see our freedoms sacrificed and thrown under the bus because somebody says, "Oh, this is really serious." You know, I try to look at stuff. I talk to more people in a week than most people, or in a day, than most people probably talk to in a month. And I'm hearing this echo throughout the 87th Assembly District. And some people are just scared to death of it, and God bless them, you know. That's the freedom of America. That's where I stand.
Richard Pulcher, Representative Edming, is skeptical of the numbers he's seeing regarding coronavirus cases. Do you have that same concern that the numbers aren't accurate?
Well, I guess I would have a question as to how accurate they are. But when we first started, he said there's just a few in Taylor County. In Taylor County, I checked yesterday, there was 74. That is a big difference. And I agree with the caller. What starts in the cities eventually gets to rural America. And I am beginning to be a little more leery of the fact that we haven't been hit by it here, but I think it's coming. Well, and I strongly, strongly recommend that everybody do what the doctor tells them. It's not the governor. It's not the Supreme Court. It's the doctors. We need to be listening to what they're telling us to do.
Schools are scheduled to reopen over the next several weeks. Districts and families have been deliberating on their best practices for student safety and learning outcomes, and not without difficulty. A report in the Medford Star talked about a heated discussion about reopening plans that took place during a recent school board meeting in Medford. James Edming, what do you say to parents, educators, students in the 87th Assembly District about this school year?
Well, first off, if we don't get on a different train track here, I don't know how we're going to ever solve this. But there again, I believe the decision should be made at the local level. You have to remember, a lot of parents today work. The mom and dad each work on a job. Now, when they have to go to work, and are they going to leave six, seven, ten-year-old kids at home to fend for themselves while they work. And there isn't enough daycare centers. There isn't enough babysitters. And it's just like this summer. The schools had to send out school lunches to the kids because their parents were working or for whatever reason. But kids learn the best in a classroom environment. I don't care what the percentages say and what the documents say. They learn the best, and when they're going on this online and all of this, they're missing out on the discussions in the classroom, you know, and the attaboys and the snickering, and they're not getting that, and that's a part of their education. When they go outside for recess, they have to learn how to get along with other kids. And when we're sitting them all back in here and worried about if they're gonna learn, I mean, but we wanna open up the schools but there again, if it's a local control, if I have, and my kids are all growing up now, and I want to send my kids to school, I'm going to send them to school, and if I don't want to, I'm going to use whatever method they have to learn. But kids, it's a proven fact. Kids learn more interacting with other students in their classes, period.
Richard Pulcher, educators, administrators, families, all facing unusual challenges this school year, balancing safety and effective education. As a legislator, how would you respond to school safety concerns as it relates to this in the 87th District?
Well, we have to be safe. Which is more important, freedom or life? Give me liberty or give me death? This was a question that our founding fathers had to face. I certainly don't believe in the liberty to pass a disease on to anyone else. I find it interesting that Edming is talking about local control when, since the Republicans gained control of both houses of the legislature, they have voted in lockstep more than 150 times to remove local control. I have not quite grandchildren who are going to school. I would like to see them safe. I understand his point that kids need interaction. They need all of this. But they can't do it if they're spreading diseases or if they're sick. When I was a kid, I would get sick for a week at a time, and I would miss a week of school. And I know today that I missed out on some stuff, but I'm here and I'm well. And I think that trumps it. I guess I'm done.
We continue with the debate between the two candidates in the November 3rd election for the 87th Wisconsin Assembly seat after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We continue with the debate between the two candidates in the November 3rd election for the 87th Wisconsin Assembly seat. They are Republican James Edming of Glenflora and the challenger, Democrat Richard Pulcher of Lublin. Moderating is my colleague, Dean Kallenbach of WPR's Eau Claire Bureau. Here again is Dean.
Krista from Ladysmith has called. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to ask a question. We are in the middle of the census, so we all know that we'll be doing our redistricting for the state of Wisconsin and drawing maps in the next year or so. And we all know that everybody wants, you know, good, clean government, more transparency in government. Nonpartisan redistricting polls very high, and there have been referendums already in 17 counties. Over 70% of our people in Wisconsin want nonpartisan redistricting, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or independence or whatever. So I would like to ask the two candidates if they are willing to take the pledge that they will support nonpartisan redistricting when the time comes to make our new maps in Wisconsin.
Thank you, Krista. And let's talk about, as Krista points out, next legislature will be redrawing legislative congressional districts. Richard Pulcher, you've spoken out in favor of nonpartisan redistricting in your past campaigns. How would you see that happening?
Well, we have a nonpartisan group of people who do the redistricting. In 2010, it was done by the legislature. And the Koch brothers had spent over $1 million on specific candidates to make sure that they had an advantage in both the Senate and the Assembly so that they could redistrict according to their wishes. To me, that is unacceptable. And the Republicans are the ones that the candidates put their name on. But even if they did it to Democrats, I would be against it. Nonpartisan redistricting means that issues count. It means that people count. And when you have gerrymandering, first of all, you have the people that are gerrymandered out of legislation that don't have a voice. And then secondly, the people who did vote and are in office, their representatives understand they don't have to answer to them. So impartial redistricting is terribly important.
James Edming, you're currently in the majority party. Are you satisfied with the legislature's current role in drawing the district lines every 10 years, or would you support a change in favor of a nonpartisan method like the commission Governor Evers has set up?
Well, if you look at, and we get blamed for gerrymandering all the time, but you have to remember, maps being set up, you can talk about the Koch brothers and what the Republicans are doing and all that, but the way the maps are drawn are in the Constitution. Now, you may think I'm a good legislator or a bad one. That's beside the point. But I can't change the Constitution. That's a major issue. And Krista, I think you were at the town hall meeting when you folks told me about this, and I'm going to say the same thing. I don't care where you put me in the state of Wisconsin. The people will pick the best candidate, and I will outwork anyone that you put against me. And I used to have, when Mayor Williams had this spot, Representative Williams, Price County was in on it. And now what's happening is, guess who was adopted to Price County? They adopted me as their representative because they couldn't get stuff done that they wanted to get done. It's not gerrymandering and all that. It's how hard and what you can get done. So I actually have another county. I go to their meeting. I've never seen anyone come to our meetings from the other side. But if the Constitution has it set up, it would take more than an act of Congress to change it. To change the Constitution takes a long, long time.
We've had a number of folks wanting to talk more about COVID-19. Tom from Glenflora is referencing Mr. Edming's comment that there's a big pot of money to fund COVID-19 reporting, and people are reporting falsely. What was Edming talking about? So I want to give you each a chance one more time to comment on those things. Mr. Edming, let's start with you maybe the last question that was mentioned there regarding the reporting from Tom and Glenflora. Go ahead and respond to that. Where are you getting that information?
Okay, where I'm getting that information is from healthcare workers, from hospitals, and it's like out in New York. And you're going to call me an absolute rotten liar for saying this, but there's $32,000 that Governor Cuomo got for everyone that had a on their death certificate coronavirus. It's absolutely just pathetic, and if I die from it, I hope they put that on my death certificate. But if I die from a crushed lung, it better not be from the coronavirus. And that's how the, even this in Taylor County, they may have had 75 or 79 positive results, but how many had it? You can have the flu and not throw up, not get the green apple quick step, you know what I mean, and you can still have the flu. You will test for it. But if you don't have to have these symptoms, but you've got it's turned into such of a political argument. I mean, I was at a function last night. I mean, and the conversation is exactly the way I'm saying it today. Yes, it's serious. There are people that, yes, do die from it, but most of them have underlying issues. It's like the lady that talked at the Democratic convention here the other night, and she talked about her dad, how he was 65 years old and excellent health, but he died from the coronavirus. Now, is that true or isn't it? Because he may have had a heart condition that was never ever diagnosed. When I had a stent put in my heart, I had no idea I had anything in there. And if I would have died from that today, they'd have probably said that I died from the coronavirus. And I've talked with a lot of medical professionals, a lot of nurses, a lot of docs, you name it. And it's true. People die from it. Trust me, people die from it. But I question how many die from that or from underlying issues.
Mr. Pulcher, I'll give you the last word in this debate about the coronavirus and any further comments that you'd like to make that you haven't made already.
Well, the accuracy of reporting, any reporting is not 100% accurate. The 74 figure, I haven't checked on it today. It may be more. But that was not people who had tested positive. That was people who were diagnosed with the disease. And that's just in Taylor County. Now, half the people who are exposed and can carry it have no symptoms at all. And so you can be, you know, the idea of testing your temperature, well, it's better than nothing, but it's hardly the cure-all. You need to realize it's dangerous. And how many people do you need to have die before it becomes something that you should do something about? Are we going to say, well, only 170,000 people died, so that's not very many people? Well, I think there was like 57 or 58,000 people who died in Vietnam. Are we going to tell our veterans, well, there wasn't that many of you who died? It's not that big a deal. It is a big deal when people die. And it is. We shouldn't allow that to happen. We should do whatever we can to prevent it.
Let's move to some other topics. And this is related to coronavirus, but it shifts us in a little bit of a different direction. And that's the topic of jobs. James Edming, you chair the legislature's Committee on Labor and Integrated Employment. You're also vice chair for the Committee for Small Business Development. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that Wisconsin's unemployment rate went from 3.1% in March, spiked to a record 13.6% in April, and according to the new report that came out yesterday, fell to 7% in July. Now, that's a lot better than April, but it's twice what it was in March and twice what it was last year at this time. Does the state need to do more to help those who are unemployed and to help with job creation?
Well, you just answered the question with the numbers that you had, from 3.1 to 13 to 7. It's going down. And of the businesses that were closed during this closure that we had to do, and this has really nothing to do with the coronavirus, but of all of these stores and restaurants and bars and bowling alleys and you name it, every penny that these folks took in, we got sales tax on that. People were told, you have to stay home. You cannot go out and drive. We never got the sales tax off the gasoline, off the gas tax. The income tax, we're not getting the income tax in because everybody's laid off. I don't believe when they came out with this that they ever even imagined that it was going to affect the economy. We still have people in Wisconsin. Matter of fact, I talked to a constituent yesterday. He got laid off the first day this hit. He has still yet to get an unemployment compensation. And what they did is the unemployment compensation department, I'm just going to throw a number up. Let's say they had 100,000 people on unemployment at all times. Well, that number jumped from 100,000 to 1 million. The computers wouldn't handle it. Nothing would handle it. And everybody's standing around there scratching themselves, figuring out how we're going to straighten this out. But this poor guy has not had a penny to work on except what he had saved from his savings. And I know people that have never worked that got a check. And when schools start this fall, the teachers are going to want an increase in pay. And they probably earned it. You know, we'll see what it looks like. It's like our roads. I mean, I don't know how we're going to keep our roads up. And it's like this budget we're in right now. For the funding for K-12 education, we added another $500 million. And that bill's on top of $360 million that we put in the one before the year before. That's $860 million we tossed into that in the last 2 years, the last two budgets. Now all of a sudden the money's gone because we never got any. And that's where the shoe is going to start to pinch. I don't know how we're going to come out of this. I have no idea. And people are going to be screaming and hollering I don't know. I'm just amazed that and yes, the coronavirus is serious. There are people die from it. I'm not saying that. And I'm sorry that I used the example of Ma run out of gas. Matter of fact, when I was talking to her son here a couple of weeks ago, that's the words that we used. I should have said she passed on. But if you get the drift, her heart just quit beating. She's 90 some years old. I mean, and if today I get the coronavirus and God says, come on, Jimmy boy, come on home. I'm ready to go. I've had a good life. I've lived a full life. And to say that this is causing, that big book, your name is written in that big book and the date's in there, except we don't know what the date is.
So getting back to the conversation about the economy, Richard Pulcher, you were a former union steward. What are your observations in Wisconsin's labor market pre-pandemic and during the pandemic, and what labor and employment policies would you support as a legislator?
Well, I think the coronavirus is highlighting the whole fallacy of cheap wages. Scott Walker came to office saying, well, people are making too much money. And now, with the virus, people are saying, we got to get money to these people. We got to get money to these people. Well, if you want to get money to people, you got to pay them. They can't create money if they're working 40 hours a week on a job. And secondly, to compare the economy during a national emergency, a national health emergency, to an economy where there is no such thing happening is just fallacy. There is no comparison. The word economics comes from Greek word oikonomos, which means household. And if someone is sick in a household, you take care of them. You don't say, you're sick, go to work, bring back a paycheck. Because in the long run, that paycheck is going to be more if the people are well. And especially if the people who die are adding to the economy.
So Richard Pulcher, the Democratic candidate for the 87th Assembly District from Lublin, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And James Edming, the incumbent Republican state representative from Glenflora, good to have you along.
And thank you. I'm glad to be here, and thank you for allowing me to be here. This is Freedom.
I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you've been listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You've been listening to a debate between the two candidates in a November 3rd election for the 87th Wisconsin Assembly seat. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Katie Galeotto of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having me.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Cady. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, if you didn't know Wisconsin was a battleground state, you will now. Danny, we've got all sorts of presidential candidates and presidents visiting the state this week. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so President Donald Trump arrived in Kenosha this week on Tuesday and came 10 days after the police shooting of Jacob Blake, a black man. And that, of course, unleashed a wave of protests in the city, along with some widespread property damage and the deployment of National Guard troops. And unfortunately, two protesters were also fatally shot. The president toured parts of the city that were damaged, and he met with local law enforcement and National Guard members. And he also spoke at a roundtable event that included members of Wisconsin's GOP congressional delegation. And mostly when he spoke, he praised police during the discussion, saying that, you know, they only have seconds to act sometimes in stressful situations. And Trump also used the visit to kind of reemphasize his campaign's themes about what he says is radical leftist violence in Democratic-run cities. He did announce some funding from the federal government, around $41 million in grants for public safety across the state. But he did not meet with the family of Jacob Blake. You know, he cited concerns with speaking while the family's attorney was present. But Justin Blake, Jacob Blake's uncle, told reporters on Tuesday that they weren't interested in meeting with the president, and that the family said that they would like to speak with Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, who was slated to visit Kenosha yesterday.
Right. You mentioned also the shooting of the two protesters. That was by, allegedly, Kyle Rittenhouse, a young man, 17 years old, from Illinois, who came up to Kenosha to protect businesses. And there was some criticism that President Trump did not take an opinion on his actions.
Right, yeah. On the eve of his visit, you know, Trump declined to condemn his actions. He kind of said that it looked like from the videos that people were chasing him and running against him, and that he seemed to be acting in self-defense, which goes against, you know, the actual events that have been reported to have occurred, in which he shot Joseph Rosenbaum, another protester, and then was followed by protesters running down the street.
All right. And not to be outdone, President Trump's opponent, former vice president and presidential candidate Joe Biden, was also in Kenosha on Thursday. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and it was his first visit during the campaign cycle, and actually the first time a Democratic nominee for president had been in the state since 2012. And he met with the family of Jacob Blake, and he was joined by his wife. And they spoke for about an hour with the family. And he also spoke with Jacob Blake over the phone for about 15 minutes. And Jacob Blake is still in the hospital. But afterward, Biden hosted a community meeting where he listened to several speeches from Kenosha residents. And he kind of urged optimism and unity in the wake of recent discord in the city. And here's some of what he had to say.
I honest to God believe we have an enormous opportunity now that the curtain's been pulled back on just what's going on in the country to do a lot of really positive things.
Thank you, Danny. Katie, on the Minnesota side. Minnesota is also a battleground state, and no independent candidates there, or at least a vice presidential candidate and vice president.
Yeah, Vice President Mike Pence made a campaign stop in Duluth last Friday. He came fresh off the Republican National Convention, and a lot of what he said echoed the messages from that four-day event. But he had some bits that were kind of tailored to the people living in the northeastern part of Minnesota that have historically really been a working class Democratic stronghold that supports labor. And I think we've seen some political shifts in the region in recent decades. And Pence is really, I guess, crafting his message to those people trying to say, you know, join us, vote for us in November. And I think the question seems to be, is this state, which has cast its electoral votes for Democratic candidates since Richard Nixon was running for office, is it really in play as a swing state in this election, like you said, as many are calling it this year?
Right. Well, I keep referring to both sides of the bay, but I want to talk about the bay itself or a story that you've been dredging up. Yes, that is a pun. What was going on in the bay?
Yeah, my colleague Greg Stanley dredged up some questions about work being done in the Duluth Harbor. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has been dredging up mud and sand, which it's been using to bolster the beach of Park Point to try and protect this area from storms and high water levels. And a former director of Minnesota's Pollution Control Agency came out and said this work is illegal due to a settlement reached in the 1970s that barred such work. On the basis that any material in the harbor would be contaminated by sort of the remnants of Duluth's industrial past. And the twist is that no court or agency seems to be able to find the settlement document. So this work is continuing as this former pollution control director kind of races to find the proof of his case and see if he can halt some of that work potentially.
That would definitely change the environment. Of course, dredging is needed to keep the harbor channels open, isn't it?
Yeah, it is needed. And I think they have used this material to kind of kill two birds with one stone and fortify some much needed land that has been battered, you know, by Lake Superior in recent years. They're also using some of it to build up a little island in the harbor where some birds are fighting for seeking territory. So I guess I think it would still have to be dredged anyways. The question might be, where else could it be disposed of if it can't be used on beaches and islands?
All right. Well, we'll be watching those closely, especially since those could affect the borders of Duluth and Superior, and we wouldn't want anything to come between the two cities. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Robin.
You can read the stories by Katie and those of the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. Be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And we've also been joined by my colleague Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you very much, Robin.
Finally today, we continue our conversations from NPR's StoryCorps team, which is partnered with the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation to bring stories of pairs of people in our area who have touched each other's lives. Here, Duluth City official Alicia Kozlowski tells her friend, Mayor Emily Larson, how she found a pathway of intergenerational healing to repair decades of trauma affecting her family members, her tribal community, and herself. Here's Alicia.
My name is Ozawa Anakwadukwe, and Ozawa is yellow, and Anakwad is cloud, and then Kwe is woman. That name is the person who visions through the clouds for people. and helps people feel the sun, to see it through that cloud and to radiate that back to other people who maybe are blocked from feeling it. I've had elders say to me that that's my gift in the world, mm-hmm. is this feeling of hope and joy. The things that I walk through in life have been difficult and challenging. Growing up in a home where there's violence and addiction challenges that ability to be able to have the resources and tools and things that a child should have just were not present. Growing up, I always thought that ending the cycle of trauma and addictions meant just not being an addict myself. As I've gotten older, and I don't struggle with substance abuse, but those effects and the impacts still very much are there, I realized that for me to be able to change the cycle of intergenerational trauma, it goes back to how I feel about myself, that story I'm telling myself, mm-hmm. drives how I'm thinking, and then it drives how I'm behaving, and being able to do the work to not pass those things on and to pass mm-hmm. on a flip of it. That, to me, is the intergenerational healing piece that's so important.
You have a big purpose, and it's palpable and powerful. It's such a beautiful, awesome thing to be with, because your vision for your life and your life with your daughter is purposeful. I am just so excited to see where those next steps are, where those impacts will be. You have really high ceiling, like no ceiling, roofless.
The sky.
The sky, yeah.
I was at a Native fashion show a couple weeks ago. They had pictures of my grandma, my great-grandma, my great-great-grandma, great-great-great-grandma, all the way up to my great-grandma times four. And my daughter and I got to stand in line with all of those women.
Oh, my gosh.
And to just see the power of these matriarchs mm-hmm. and what they've passed on. All the good things and all the negative things, but also the resilience and, like, the mm-hmm. hope. It's pretty amazing to be able to see my daughter now walking mm-hmm. in that way. We're the new ancestors. And what do we want our next seven generations to remember about us?
That was Alicia Kozlowski, an official for the city of Duluth, telling her friend, Mayor Emily Larson, how she lives a life of purpose, replacing intergenerational trauma with healing. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.